Hi, and welcome to Last Man Standing, here with me, Paul Stevenson, here live with you on Republic Broadcasting Network. And do donate to us, please, listeners, and be as generous as you can to keep the show on the road. You can do that by credit or debit card on 512-246-9549, extension 3. Or on toll-free 800-724-2719, extension 3. Or you can mail in checks, cash, money orders to RBN at 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. And if you go to the Republic Broadcasting Network homepage, you'll see the yellow donate button, which is the various options there, including credit card and also to donate by PayPal. Now, in the second half of the show, anybody wants to call in, please do. The number is 512-248-8252 or toll-free 800-313-9443. Again, that's toll-free 800-313-9443. So the new format of the show is we're going to have one break on the half hour for 6 minutes. So then we'll have the last 24 minutes, well, probably about 22 minutes or whatever, before the outro music for calls. So I'm just going to set the scene a little bit. In the first half of the show, in terms of what I'm going to discuss today, and then I'd love to hear from you in the second half for your comments or questions if you agree or disagree. But I'm going to focus on the arguments around this Ukraine Russia situation, and I do think it's very important that of all the things we could discuss, because the belligerence continues from the West. Despite what seems, for all the world, to be a losing proposition for Ukraine, the fighting still goes on. But, you know, I kind of liken it a little bit like maybe to a tennis match or something like that, or a football match. I mean, you can be two sets to one down in a tennis match, and two breaks down. You know, it can be 3-1 in the fourth set, and unless something dramatic happens, which for all the world doesn't look likely, it's an inevitability that the match is over. It's just got to run its course. Now, the ball's still going to be going back and forward across the net for another little while, for another few games, but you're two sets to one down and you're two breaks down in the final set. You know, it's over. I mean, you can be 4-5-1 down in a football game. Well, there's 12 minutes left, 10 minutes left. Okay, there's still some football to be played. Maybe 10 minutes, but, you know, your supporters are leaving the stadium. You know, this game's over, barring a miracle. And that's what the situation is in this Russia-Ukraine war. I want to concentrate more today, though, on the arguments and that we hear surrounding this issue when it comes to this. What I, like I said, rather than admitting defeat and negotiating, they want to keep this going. You have Macron over here, who no doubt in my mind is bluffing. But he's not alone. The rhetoric still continues that Russia can't win. Well, what does that mean? Russia is winning. I don't think these people have ever considered what would happen if they ever lost or if Russia won. And that's why it's concerning to me, particularly here in Europe, because this thing could escalate very quickly, and Putin has made it very clear any NATO troops on the ground there would signal quite possibly a nuclear response from Russia on home soil. Dumo, as the Russians call it, is home. On your home, he said, on your home soil, at the when he recently addressed this moron Macron's rhetoric. By the way, maybe people speculate about what Macron is grandstanding about, that he wants to be, most people, even Western commentators, acknowledge that Macron has a bit of an ego, let's say, and that he wants to position himself as the leader of Europe. One could also argue this is a distraction from the fact that his wife of 24 years, his senior, is perhaps not his wife after all, but actually his husband, which is a rather creepy, sinister kind of a thought. But I've seen some videos on the internet, and this has been a theory, it's a side issue, but you never know, maybe this is motivating too, that his wife is actually a man who converted, who transitioned to a woman. Among other things, apparently they can't find photographs of this woman before she was 30 as a girl. Anyway, I digress. But the arguments continue. And the tragedy in all of this is that whilst not negotiating a peace, even Pope Francis, a man whose role, at least that's what it's supposed to be, is a spiritual and moral leader, has come out last week and said, listen, Ukraine should have the courage to raise the white flag. And of course, he got, roundly, aggressively dismissed by the Kiev regime and others to keep his thoughts to himself. But this is the Pope. We're not talking about, some nobody here. And in so doing, he has suggested sometimes it's the most courageous thing to, I guess, what the scriptures affirm, humble yourself. This is the problem. You need to know when you're beaten, because the scriptures say those who exalt themselves shall be humbled, and those who humble themselves shall be exalted. Maybe they should humble themselves now. Maybe the Lord will exalt them better than what the position they might expect to be in. But all these people have done for years, and who are pushing this whole agenda in Ukraine, is exalt themselves, and they continue to exalt themselves, and they continue to get humble. And the ultimate humility is in the post, for sure. And it is going to be enormous. And then what? And this is what worries me. If these people are not prepared to humble themselves at this point, what's next? But by not negotiating, Russia is presumably going to end up in a much stronger position than they are now, and you're just going to see more corpses pile up on both sides, but most of them on the Ukrainian side. And yet these are the same people in an upside-down world who claim to care about Ukraine. So what I want to concentrate here today is the arguments go, first of all, it was unprovoked. Secondly, we hear that the Russians won't stop there. After they've finished in Ukraine, Europe is next. And by the way, the assumption is they want all of Ukraine. No, none of this has any evidence. You'll hear people argue this, that Putin won't stop the eastern Ukraine. He wants all of Ukraine. And then after, into the Baltic states, which are NATO states, and right across Europe. Like I said, perhaps this is true, but there's no evidence for it. Certainly, we have enough public statements from Vladimir Putin to acknowledge that the guy has been incredibly consistent, to the point of being a broken record, in fact, for years now, what he wants. The other assumption and misplaced belief system and propaganda that we hear is that you can't negotiate with Putin. He's not interested, and he's not reasonable and can't be trusted. He's a maniac. Even on, I'm going to come back full circle on these three points, but these are the main ones. It was unprovoked. Russia won't stop there. They're a belligerent, aggressive actor, and then once they've finished in Ukraine, they're coming for Europe. And you can't negotiate with this man. He's crazy. But yet, one has to ask, the same people will make contradictory arguments, and in fact, very much contradict their own arguments, because we hear from the same talking heads in Western media in the same narrative on this point, for example, that after Ukraine, Putin is coming for Europe. But yet, the reasons they give for Ukraine needing to have NATO membership is that Putin and Russia wouldn't dare invade a NATO country. You can't have it both ways. This guy is apparently coming through Europe. Last time I checked, that would involve going through a lot of NATO countries, and it only takes one to trigger Article 5. But yet they insist that Ukraine needs NATO membership because he wouldn't dare attack a NATO country. Contradiction. In fact, only yesterday, the BBC covered might of a nation in Estonia. I dare say most of you listening in the United States would have no clue where Estonia is. Quite frankly, probably most people in Western Europe and the UK could barely tell you where it is. In the UK, rightly or wrongly, there is a distinct lack of interest about what happens in Eastern European countries. They are simply not significant enough to bother us in our daily activities or thoughts. But only yesterday, the BBC covered Estonian Prime Minister saying Putin is afraid of war with NATO. Okay, well, what are you talking about then? If he's afraid of war with NATO, why are you so worried about him coming and invading Europe? What is this? The Russians are coming. The Russians are coming. We need to keep pumping in weapons and money to defend, to help the Ukrainians to defend them there, because if we don't stop them there, he'll be on our shore. But they do this incessantly. And because they always live in an echo chamber, no one ever challenges us on this. And when they do get challenged, for example, and the reality is pointed out to them that Ukraine is in a desperate situation. They're running out of artillery. They're running out of manpower. They're running out of air defense systems. And that the Russians are in a much stronger position. And that the Russians would, at the very least, even if NATO did send in their troops, at the very least would give NATO a very bloody nose. And that we have underestimated the Russians, and that they are much stronger than the Ukrainians. Well, what you get then is more contradictions of their own arguments, making our arguments for us in some ways by saying, well, if these Russians are so great, how come it took them 2 years to conquer 20% of Ukraine? Okay, well, why are you so worried then? By that logic, it would take five times that. It would take 10 years for them to, in total, for them to occupy all of Ukraine. 10 years, another 8 years by their own scoffing at Russia. But yet we're all supposed to be so worried about the Russians coming. And yet they themselves say, oh, the Russians are weak, they're useless. It took them 2 years to occupy 20% of Ukraine. They're not so great. Okay, well, even if it's true, and there is no evidence for it, that Russia, certainly not in any public statement like I mentioned earlier that Putin has ever made, that he has any interest in occupying all of Ukraine, notwithstanding he may be forced to remove this threat militarily by getting rid of this Zelensky cancerous regime on his doorstep, but notwithstanding that, no interest. This would be a last resort, I believe, for Putin. Very expensive, and it's very contentious and dangerous, and a complete headache, basically, to be occupying a bunch of people who, for the most part, hate you. So notwithstanding that option, he's no interest, certainly not any public, on any public record, have we heard him express an interest in occupying all of Ukraine. But even if he did, according to this logic, that it's taken them 2 years to occupy 20% of Ukraine. In total, it would take them 10 years to occupy all of Ukraine. Another 8 years from now. But yet we're all supposed to be so worried about this Russian threat. In a book that I bought recently, and it's a very concise, small little book, I'm glad I was able to find something like this, a little cohesive narrative about some, it's more like a book, it's only 75 pages long. It's it's recommended and it has supportive quotes on the back of the book by Chase Freeman, previously the Assistant Secretary of Defense for the International Security Affairs. It is supported by Douglas McGregor and John Mersheimer, among others. And he outlines some of these points as well. It's got Noam Chomsky's support as well. It's a book called How the West Brought War to Ukraine. For anybody interested, just to look, because I like to have these, you know, books which are not, you know, encyclopedias where you can have bullet points and it can sort of condense some of the arguments. And was fortunate enough to find this one by a guy called Benjamin Abelone. I believe it's maybe it's Abelone, probably Abelone. And I have to pick it up here somewhere, but it says, he said, according to the narrative, Mr. Putin is an insatiable expansionist who lacks any plausible national security motivations for his decisions. Likewise, the narrative portrays any Western desire to compromise and negotiate a quick end to the conflict as wishful thinking and appeasement. Yeah, this is one of the other arguments we get, appeasement. And of course, without going too much into history, but those of us who are more revisionist in our history would suggest we've seen this movie before, and that a lot of historical reality has been, let's say, buried down the memory hole of reality, historical memory hole. Although I remember reading some things at school about World War II that made me question even then about why, you know, one particular individual in the 1930s was responsible for everything. But anyway, we get this appeasement narrative like Neville Chamberlain was accused of at the time. And this appeasement narrative, of course, itself rests upon a false premise that we are dealing with an unreasonable maniac. And that this is a simple and profound transgenerational ubiquitous battle of good and evil at work here. And so you see, you can't appease evil in a battle of good and evil, because we're dealing with evil here and we can't possibly appease that. And even if we wanted to, such is the evilness and the aggression of Vladimir Putin that it would be an exercise in total futility. America's new military objective thus emerges directly from Western perceptions about Moscow's motivations and the causes of the war. And so a crucial question comes into the focus. Is the Western narrative about Ukraine war correct? If it is, then Western policies might arguably make sense, even if they entail some risk of nuclear conflict. But if the narrative is wrong, then the West is basing existential decisions on false premises. Like I just said, he's come to the same conclusion here. These false premises, these dangerous false premises. If the narrative is wrong, a quickly negotiated compromise, one that would spare the lives of combatants and civilians alike, and simultaneously greatly reduce the risk of nuclear war, would not represent appeasement. Rather, it would be a practical necessity, even a moral obligation, or quite. Finally, if the Western narrative about Russia's motivations is wrong, then the actions the West is taking now are likely to deepen the crisis and may lead to nuclear war, which is why, like I said, I'm focusing on this story, because the West is not backing down. The rhetoric continues. They never had a plan B. They assumed that they would roll over Russia with their sanctions. They would weaken the military. They would weaken the country economically. They would make life so miserable for the Russian people that they would demand to get rid of Vladimir Putin, which is always the ultimate goal. Regime change in Russia to get rid of Vladimir Putin. Hasn't worked. And so now what? Finally, if the Western narrative about Russia, okay, reach nuclear war. In this book, I argue that the Western narrative is incorrect in crucial respects. It is the opposite of the truth. The underlying cause of the war lies not in an unbridled expansionism of Mr. Putin or in the paranoid delusions of military planners in the Kremlin, but in a 30-year history of Western provocations directed at Russia that began during the dissolution of the Soviet Union and continued to the start of the war. And yet, this is what we were told, and you should be wary when you hear a narrative being repeated as often as this one was about when this conflict started and still persists today, that it was an unprovoked attack by Russia. Because then we can continue this childish facade that this is a ubiquitous battle between the forces of good and evil, with us, of course, always being the forces of good in the West here, and autocrats and maniacs like Vladimir Putin representing evil. These provocations placed Russia in an untenable situation for which war seemed to Mr. Putin and his military staff the only workable solution. In arguing this case, I pay special attention to the United States and subject it to particular sharp criticism because it has played the decisive role in shaping Western policy. I mean, to the point of completely obliterating the German economy and, you know, pressurizing Scholz, a weak man, looks like a weak man, is a weak man. I judge not, I suppose, but very difficult not to, but has forfeited the interests of Germany. And this has been the case right across the European nations. We, of course, have not needed so much to have been coerced, such as the alignment by the forces that rule particularly strongly in the British establishment and the United States establishment. Same people, you know who we're talking about. In criticizing the West, it is not my aim to justify Moscow's invasion or exonerate Russia's leader. I have no brief for Mr. Putin, notwithstanding all I will say. I believe he had alternatives to war, but I do not want to understand him in the sense of seeking to rationally assess the casual sequence that led him to launch the war. Of course, the other factor in all of this when it comes to provocation is the issue of the rights of the people in the Donbass region who didn't recognize the government that resulted from the coup in 2014, who identify as Russians, as they are Russian speakers. They're much closer geographically to Russia, so we shouldn't be surprised. The Russian Orthodox Church, etc. And then, of course, you have the far-right elements in Kiev that started shelling these people for 10 years. And that's what the Minsk Accords were about. And, of course, the West duped Putin into that as well. Okay, there are some nuances that you can go into the detail of all of this, but largely that's what occurred. What I do have in mind, back to the book, when I speak of Western provocation, what do I have in mind when I speak of Western provocations? It is often suggested, for example, that the expansion of NATO into the countries of Eastern Europe has contributed no tensions. This assertion is correct but incomplete. To begin with, the implications of NATO expansion too often remain abstractions, which with the actual threat to Russia not appreciated. At the same time, the United States and its allies, both individually and in coordination with one another, have taken provocative military actions that are not directly tied to NATO. Focusing on NATO is important, but attending only to NATO obscures the full scope and seriousness of the predicament that the West has created for Russia. As a preview for what is to come, I list here key Western provocations, which is why I like this book, which I will explain and comment on over the course of this book. Here he's just listing some bullet points, which he will later expand on. During the past three decades, the United States, sometimes alone, sometimes with its European allies, has done the following. Now, remember again, notwithstanding, you know, this is just about pertaining to NATO-type provocations. It doesn't even include the whole Minsk Accord saga. We are told, oh, no. Completely unprovoked attack by Russia. So, here we go. Number one, expanded NATO over 1,000 miles eastward, pressing it towards Russia's borders in disregard of assurances previously given to Moscow. Withdrawn unilaterally from the anti-ballistic missile treaty and placed anti-ballistic launch systems in newly joined NATO countries. These launchers can accommodate and fire offensive nuclear weapons at Russia, such as nuclear-tipped Tomahawk cruise missiles. Helped lay the groundwork for and may have directly instigated an armed far-right group coup in Ukraine. This coup replaced a democratically elected pro-Russian government with an unelected pro-Western one. Conducted countless NATO military exercises near Russia's border. These have included, for example, live-fire rocket exercises whose goal was to simulate attacks on air defense systems inside Russia. Asserted without pressing strategic need and in disregard of the threat, such a move would boast Russia that Ukraine would become a NATO member. NATO then refused to renounce this policy, even when doing so might have averted war. Withdrawn unilaterally from the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty, increasing Russian vulnerability to a U.S. first strike. Armed and trained the Ukrainian military through bilateral agreements and held regular joint military training exercises inside Ukraine. The goal has been to produce NATO-level military interoperability even before formally admitting Ukraine into NATO. Led the Ukrainian leadership to adopt an uncompromising stance towards Russia, further exacerbating the threat to Russia and putting Ukraine in the path of Russian military blowback. And I might add, he completes there as bullet points and will expand later, but since we found out that the CIA have had 12 military bases on the border of Ukraine, between the Russian-Ukraine border. I mean, it's been an endless list of provocations. Okay, we'll come to James on the other side. We've got a caller waiting.
Bigger than me, it's screaming out.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
People often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read a few. After taking Extendivite for about 6 months, I've noticed improvement on the numbness of my hands and wrists, from the carpal tunnel syndrome. I will continue to buy product. This formula is very powerful. I am feeling much better. My heart rate and blood pressure is stabilized, my lower edema has reduced, and lower leg pain due to blood clots has disappeared. This product has relieved what appears to be an angina problem, pain in the chest after climbing stairs and short on breath. I'm quite happy about it. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendovite.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
Support those that support the network. Support Dixie Republic at DixieRepublic.com. Email proudsouthern123@gmail.com and let them know that RBN sent you.
I'm so excited to have you as part of the Wild Pastures family, and we look forward to bringing you the pasture-raised meats that you and your family will love. Now, we started Wild Pastures because so many of my clients would tell me they just couldn't find high-quality pasture-raised meats, and even when they did, it was so expensive that they couldn't afford to eat it regularly. Now, I'm not talking about the bottom-of-the-barrel healthy meats that have claims like natural or free-range or even cage-free, terms that were actually created by the industrial food industry to make us feel all warm and fuzzy about buying their low quality products. I'm talking about truly nourishing pasture-raised meats, the kind that you'll never really find in a grocery store. Our farmers are doing things beyond organic. Our beef is 100% grass-fed and grass-finished and raised on pastures free from chemicals and other pesticides. Our chickens are 100% pasture-raised, where they get their natural diet of grass and forage and insects. We will never settle for free-range, which is actually one of the most deceptive terms in the chicken industry. In fact, less than 0.1% of the chicken consumed in the United States is truly pasture-raised in the way that ours is. And our pork is 100% pasture-raised as well. So if you care about where your food comes from, then you have definitely made it to the right place. As a Wild Pastures member, you'll be supporting the most highly principled farmers in America and getting the most nutrient-dense, nourishing, and sustainable meats in the world. I'm confident you'll love being part of our mission at Wild Pastures, and you will really love the delicious, nourishing meats that we're going to deliver straight to your door.
Visit republicbroadcasting.org and click the Wild Pastures banner ad. Secure a shipment today. Beef, poultry, and pork. Raised the way nature intended.
Hi, Tom Bolton for Ease Off. I know so many of you are finding our EZ4 carcass drop and lift an essential tool for your meat processing operation, but today I want to spotlight four of our new products. First, our right height hog cradles with steel or aluminum frames. Our customers love this back-saving innovation that enhances sanitation and speeds production. Next, our beef cradles with stainless steel or aluminum frames eliminate rust and corrosion. We hope you'll compare our quality and prices for this essential part of your processing line. Our cradles are especially effective when used with our power skinner. And finally, our hook tumbler will keep your hooks clean and polished. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
EaseOff, LLC, 417-932-6419.
and welcome back to Last Man Standing with me, Paul Stevenson, here on Republic Broadcasting Network. Okay, the lines are now open, and the first half of the show I managed to get done what I intended to do without veering too far off. But I was just breaking down and challenging, or really dispelling, the myth of some of these misplaced and dangerous belief systems that drive the Western narrative, whether it's by those who are foolish enough to believe this propaganda, or by those who, for their own more nefarious purposes, disingenuously push such narrative. But they are dangerous, and often, like I outlined, these talking heads in Western media and others are not even consistent with them anyway, but in typical Western talking head, Western mainstream media fashion, such as their hubris that it never seems to bother them, or they live in such an echo chamber where they're never going to get challenged on them anyway. Well, very rarely. So, yeah, breaking down and dispelling some of those myths, focusing for the most part on the biggest one, I believe, or one of the biggest ones anyway, that this war on Ukraine was an unprovoked invasion by Russia. Okay, we'll go to James in Vancouver, and then we'll go to Daryl in Canada. But again, the lines are open, so if you want to call in, please do. Okay, go ahead, James.
Yes, hi, Paul. they've been provoking Russia since at least 2010, 2011. I remember watching a press conferences with Putin, and he told them way back then, he says, do you know what you're doing? You know, he was saying that to the NATO and the West and that kind of thing. So the interesting thing about it is I remember Kenneth N. Walls wrote a paper on war. He was a professor at Columbia University. He's now passed away. He said wars happen because there's no one there to stop them. But I think the point is that wars happen because they've been planned. And I wanted to reference one thing for you. Look up the movie The Ambassador from 1984. It's called The Ambassador in 1984, and it stars Robert Mitchum. And if you look at the movie, you'll see the whole play list from October 7th of last year. This movie is exactly like what they claimed happened last year in Gaza, and this sneak attack and the kids having a rock festival or whatever, right out of the movie. Back to you.
Yeah, I'll be sure to check it out if I come across it. Yeah, I mean, that's the other situation, that October 7th thing. I mean, a lot has emerged since then. You know, are we, immediately the question was, you know, is the great Mossad, are we supposed to believe that they had no idea this attack was coming? But, you know, so many other falsehoods have been revealed since then as well.
Right. And you're right. They create these narratives because this is what they want the people to know. But in the back room, it's the money boys and the arms dealers that are planning the war, you see. So this is the dilemma. Walt said there's no one there to stop them, but the fact of the matter is they plan them all the time, and they've been doing it for thousands of years. So I'll let you go. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I was going to say, Putin gave an interview recently where I saw him, and it was a little chilling, not necessarily in a bad way, but he seemed full of righteous indignation and righteous hatred. And his eyes narrowed as he talked about vampires, interesting word, who have their stomachs full of human flesh and their pockets full of money that have been ruling for centuries. And more or less, I'm paraphrasing, say, their days are numbered, as his eyes narrowed. And I'd never seen Putin like that, speak that way, because he's a pretty cool kind of a guy, but he's not without emotion. And I think even this war in Ukraine has taken a toll on him, because I don't think Putin takes any pleasure out of this, but he understands his role as a protector of the Russian Federation and what needs to be done. But I think he's very grieved by the loss of life in Ukraine. And I think he is sick and tired of it. This man's on a mission. Right. Anyway, okay, thank you, James. Let's go to Daryl in Canada.
Yes, before I get to Ukraine and Russia, I did see one photo of Macron's husband, as you call him, Paul. He was about 10 years old, blonde, nice-looking Jewish blonde boy. I'm sure the girls were after him. He's definitely a boy. I mean, if you look at that picture, there's not even the slightest doubt. I mean, sometimes you look at guys or girls, even in puberty, around 10, 11, 12, whatever, and sometimes you can't tell. This was definitely a nice-looking boy, and he's definitely transitioned, so there's no doubt about it.
Something not right. I mean, I've never really thought much about it, but you know, people have been covered in a way, in a more serious way. I saw Candace Owens, I don't know, whatever, if you give her any integrity, but you know, she raised some very good points. I saw a video, and yeah, that's another sort of creepiness levels into the stratosphere, that one, I'm afraid.
Right, it's nowhere in the stratosphere, the subject we're talking about here. The West has sold their people on victory only. It's almost like the COVID vaccines and the doctors and all the other ones. They can't go back. They haven't, you know, they've already poisoned the well, so you can't do anything when you poison a well, right? They backed themselves in a corner. Like the media just recently, and all through the last 2 years, they were focused on that attack in the north there, in Belgorod, and they penetrated a few miles into Russian territory, and they lost 1,500 troops, and they were there for a day or a few hours.
Total disaster.
They retreated, and nothing. It was like they lost 1,500 troops and a bunch of equipment for a photo op. And then it's so unbelievable the way they frame this. They got BlackRock. They've already given BlackRock a $500 billion contract to rebuild Ukraine. And it's like they don't even know, like, Russia has got no voice. They don't think that Russia's building up Ukraine, the territory they've taken, the Russian-speaking territory they've taken, and they're building it up already. They've already, think, built up 60% of Mariupol. They're not going to give that territory back. They're never going to give it back.
No, there's no way that territory's coming back. And like I said earlier, I think because these people don't have a plan B, such as their hubris, that's what worries me. And if Putin is if he's forced into the headache of having to militarily occupy Ukraine and to militarily remove this cancer in Kiev that is Zelensky and his cronies, then you know you're going to have a situation where two things are going to happen. It's going to feed into this narrative, well, we told you, Russia wants to invade all of Ukraine. And the other problem is, well, you know, what are they going to do then? You know, it's like, you know, when's the point? Are they ever going to admit defeat is the big problem, you know? And it doesn't look like that's part of their makeup, let's say, to actually say, okay, we got this wrong. Maybe they will, but they just seem to be continuously doubling down, you know.
Yeah, I mean, Russia is never going to attack a NATO country, but they may have to go far, like you say, into Western Ukraine. That's when the scary part starts. It's already scary enough, but when you start seeing those swaths of territory taken, and Russia is not going to stop until they take out the, as they say, the criminal regime in Ukraine. That's when the Russians are the least likely to use nuclear. The West is way more likely to use tactical nuclear weapons under those circumstances that you just mentioned, Paul. When they start getting close over there, and that might even be a strategy that Zelensky, if he's still in power, might want to use, because the closer he gets, he's going to be saying, "Okay, help us now." They're right on the doorstep, like you say. And you know what? That's when the nutcases over in the West that we have now, it might happen. That's where the provoking might happen.
Yeah, this is the problem, you see, because it's like this is like a kind of a toxic marriage where I said this right from the start, where, you know, if you've got a husband or a wife constantly accusing in a paranoid fashion their husband or their wife of infidelity, and they make their life such a misery that eventually, through weakness or something, they commit an infidelity, well, then the narrative is, look, I told you I was right all along, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how the West cannot see what's going, what's happening here, especially in after, you know, the last, six, eight months after this failed offensive. I mean, nothing's going to change in Russia. It's only going to get, Russia's only going to get strong. They're winning the war, really, for basically three big reasons. They have more troops, and there's much more needed and better strategy. Although they don't have that many more troops, because they're only under a special military operation right now. They haven't like gone to war. If they get a war, then you're going to have like five times more troops. It might take 6 months or a year, but they haven't even recruited anywhere near what they can. Number two is that they have much more ammunition. The shells that they have, I mean, that's the Russian trademark. That's how they defeated Germany along with the West. But they defeated Germany because they just bombarded them with shells constantly in every front. And the number one reason that they're winning is because of air supremacy. They have total air supremacy, especially the drones. This Lancet drones that they have, it's like the T-34, really. It's like the T-34 tank of the Second World War. That's the most, you know, the most powerful arm that the Russians had. It was just 50,000 of them, I think they made. The T-34, I mean, the Lancet's destroying everything. Everything, troops, tanks, everything, and there's more to come. They got factories of that stuff. How does the West not know this? Like, they just made Russia stronger. They've actually turned Russia into a military machine that they weren't really before. To some degree, they were. They have better nuclear weapons and everything. But they brought this upon themselves. They reaped what they're sowing.
Yeah. Well, you know, and they you know, this kind of, it's quite a, it's quite a fascinating yet dark phenomenon, where it really is a self-perpetuating thing, because people in the West who are gullible, and like I said, they have grown up with, or, you know, they have established these dangerous belief systems, and everything that Russia does, rather than cause them to, you know, sober up, it only confirms that kind of bias. It's kind of like confirmation bias that you see this, you know, we were right. Putin is evil. Now look, he's coming more into Ukraine. Oh, you guys pointed out to me there's no evidence he wants to take over Ukraine. He was only interested in the Donbass region. Well, now look, he's in the doorsteps of Kiev. We told you we cannot afford to take the risk that he's not going to come here. We need to prepare. In fact, we need to stop him in there, send in the NATO troops. And, of course, from the Russian side, they see all this Macron aggression and all this talk, and of course they could say, well, he's an airbag, we can't take him seriously. But that's easy for us to say. If you're in the Russian Federation, you can't afford to not respond. And this is how wars start, and this is why this is a very, very dangerous situation, because it's a toxic relationship, you know. It's like one side confirms the other one's worst fears until you get to a point where you've got two people, you know, pointing guns at each other, and it's like, who's going to blink here? Well, maybe none of them do, and they both end up killing each other, you know?
Right, and the West is more likely to blink, that's for sure. The last thing I'll say is, I don't know about, I mean, Trump said that he's probably going to cut off all the funding to Russia to, if he wins, even though the odds are actually, people are thinking, oh, Trump's going to win. If you look at the odds right now, and you can look at them in Britain where it's legal and everything, and it's somewhat legal out here in North America, the odds are even right now. It's even between, and then in Canada, and then a third party is like 20-1 or something. So it's not nearly so slam dunk for Trump, it's a coin flip. But if Canada, if Trump gets in there, he says he's going to cut off all that. But then what? Then he's going to probably ask Putin in exchange to give back some territory and stuff. And then Putin is going to balk at that. And then what? Then what about this peacemaking Trump, supposedly? He's one, I think he's more likely to use, you know, weapons possibly even than Biden if Putin doesn't go along. So I'm not so sure, even if Trump gets in there, that he is going to end this war. I think Kennedy's the best chance, but I mean, what chance does he have? So it's scary, and the West is the scariest part of the bunch. I don't know. You know, I'll just end by saying this, Paul. Anybody, you could explain this situation 2 years ago to a five-year-old, and he would have said, how in the world could Ukraine win there, Daddy? It's almost impossible. I mean, how in the world do they think that this is ever going to be the way they think it's going to be. It's just, it's like the West is dyslectic, and I'll end it at that, Paul. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Darrell. Well, yeah, you would hope that eventually reality would impose itself in this situation, but it hasn't so far. And like I said, the belligerence continues. They double down, they treble down, they quadruple down. And such is their, like I said, their entitlement, I guess, to dominate and to persist in their hegemony, that I worry that they never will. And what's going to happen another year from now? Well, Ukraine will have lost even more territory, even more Ukrainian soldiers, young men, old men, women, pregnant women, maybe disabled people, if you believe some reports, will be thrown into this meat grinder. And, you know, I refer back again to Putin mentioning these people have their stomachs full of human flesh. They've and their pockets full of money. They've gotten fat off human flesh. Actual vampires, if such existed, are less dangerous. There's only so many, I guess, humans they can eat, like when you see in the movies or whatever. But these people can kill hundreds of thousands of men, millions, and get rich and get fat off it. They have an insatiable appetite for human blood. And I don't think for one second Putin enjoys participating in this. Obviously, he has to defend the interests of the Russian Federation, but, you know, he's aware that there's a lot of young Ukrainians, which he sees as brother Slavs, also perishing in this. So it must be an awful predicament for the man. But anyway, who cares? He's the most evil man that ever lived, second only to Adolf Hitler, of course. Or maybe he's overtaken Adolf Hitler yet? I don't know. Okay, we've got one more caller, I think. Mindset in New York. You've got the last 5 minutes, my friend. Go ahead.
Hey, that's a lot of time for me. So I'll start off with, unfortunately, I don't know if you guys know Revolution Radio, Studio AMB. They're a, I kind of consider them like your cousin or like brother or something, brethren.
I used to have a show on there for about 4 years.
Exactly why I consider that. Jim Fetzer's on there now, and he used to be on Revolution. Yeah, same with Dave Scorpio. You know what I mean? So I feel like you're kind of family. Do you know about Mechanic? You know what happened to Mechanic?
No, I don't. Someone asked me that the other day. No, I don't. As I say, I had a show on three or 4 years. Yes, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, supposedly Mechanic died. So I want to give a shout-out to Mechanic. I thought he was a pretty cool guy. And also, what do you call it? The way that everyone should be living is four things. One, golden rule, treat others the way you want to be treated, and that includes do no harm to others, obviously. And then two, body language and personality type. Learn how your mind works as a personality type. And learn how others that you're going to be dealing with, enemy, whoever, friend, colleague, how their mind works. It's 16 personality types. Relax, the timer off. And then also body language. It helps you to understand what somebody's with context and that. You can read somebody, and it doesn't even matter if they have the same language as you. Body language is like a universal language that anyone can pick up on. So those two things. And then three, do not rush to judgment. Do not take character to context. And do not judge a book by its cover. And four, do always the fair, right, just, and true thing. And how do you know which one's what? Well, if it's fair, it should be right, just, and true. If it's true, it should be right, just, and fair. When you get all three to make one, and you get all four done, then you know it's the right way to go. So those are the four ways, those are like the four rules in a way of how we should be being. And it doesn't matter what culture, religion, race, creed, gender that you are, anything and everyone should be able to follow that. And I think that's going to help us have a more justice path. Two, I think the Kennedys and friends, JFK, his family and that, I think they might have set things up when he was in office so that this way, when he got assassinated or things didn't go their way, all this time since Kennedy, they said they've had puppets in or whatever. I think it's partly because everyone that gets put in there, there's a national security threat to whatever it is that they have on the Kennedys, but they have it twisted in such a way that if it gets out, it'll look bad on America or something like that. So they're kind of like blackmailing, I think, America, because Jesse Waters will become, or he was going to be, I'm not going to allow it, the 2032 president with Tucker Carlson as VP. Everything's already set up in that. They're going to have AOC and Julian Castro win 2028, and then they're going to be Democrat independent, and then they're going to help take out the Democrat Independent Party and bring out the GOP. Right now, the Republican Party's dead, and the Independent Party's coming about. And then by 2032, they'd have it set up so the GOP would come in and the Democrat Party would be taken out and blame all the stuff that happened on Democrats that happened to Republicans now. Blah, blah, blah. So it's already over with. I've got it all on lockdown. And also, one more thing. Here's one more thing. When it comes to voting, I just thought of this today. I think illegals should be able to vote along with felons. But if they're going to vote, they have to go to a different place. So, like, citizens of the United States, all countries will do this. The real citizens that have not done wrong and that are good citizens, they show up to a particular booth place or whatever, and they vote privately. You know, they get to vote, and they vote who we want. But if you're a felon or an illegal in a country or a prisoner, you can vote, but you have to have your name down to who you're voting for with a picture. And obviously, if you're in prison, we don't have to worry. But if you're not in prison, you're an illegal or a felon, you have to show up within 6 weeks after voting to verify who you voted for and that it was you. And also, if that doesn't happen 2 weeks later,
all right, Mike, we are out of time, my friend.
Please. They'll come out to your place.
Okay, thank you.
So,
we're out of time, but thank you very much for your contribution. I will be back again next Sunday, same time, midday Central, or sorry, 1 p.m. Central, 2 p.m. Eastern, 7 over here in the UK. Thank you very much for joining me and for everyone who contributed. And thank you, Sam, for producing the show. Take care and God bless everyone.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.